I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Urbanite Radio Stories on the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Marin Alsop and the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, presenting its 2009-2010 season featuring Kathleen Battle, Andre Watts, Yitzhak Perlman, and more. Tickets to the Meyerhof available at 410-783-8000 or at bsomusic.org. We're going to talk this hour about a lawsuit brought by the ACLU, that's the American Civil Liberties Union in Maryland, in Annapolis. It's in a situation that almost seems, as some many people describe, as Kafkaesque, something out of a weird nightmare that people can't seem to put their hands around. We'll learn more about this in just a minute, but in a nutshell, the housing authority in Annapolis and the local police came up with an ordinance that may not even be legal, that's kept over 500 people away from public housing, keeping mothers from their children, children from their mothers, grandparents not allowed in, fathers not allowed to live with their kids, people being arrested for trespass and put in jail, even if they've never had a conviction for anything else, are being banned. We'll talk about this and more with our two guests. We'll be joined in studio by Deborah Gian, who is legal director for the ACLU of Maryland, and Glenda Smith joins us, who is one of the Annapolis public housing residents, bringing this lawsuit against the housing authority of the city of Annapolis. And I want to welcome first Deborah and Glenda both. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Glenda, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate
you
taking
the
time.
Thank you for having
me. Oh, it's great. I was very taken with you in the video I saw of you today. So
thank you.
You're very taken. So, but before we start, let me give you all a sense of what's going on here. And what we're going to play is a video you can see on YouTube, and you can link to all this later on our website and to the ACLU website, which you can link to by going to SteinerShow at gmail. The SteinerShow.org. But I want to play for you this 3 or 4 minute clip. It sets up what's going on. You'll understand the situation in Annapolis, and then we'll begin to discuss it. So here it goes.
Delray Folks is not waiting for the bus. He's waiting for his grandmother to bring his 3-year-old son to the bus stop for a visit. Delray can't live with his son because the public housing authority where his family lives says Delray is a criminal and unsafe, but he has no criminal convictions. So Delray must wait at the bus stop just off the property line. Delray wants to be an active father, but an arrest years ago put Delray on the ban list and he can't get off. Delray was playing video games at a friend's house when there was a drug raid.
I didn't do nothing wrong. This was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
The case was never prosecuted. He wasn't convicted. But the arrest itself placed him on the ban list. And then after that, the only criminal involvement he's had is when he's been arrested for trespassing on Hacker property as a result of being on the ban list when he's tried to go visit his family members.
Yeah, there you go. I can't visit my son at his own home. Holidays like Christmas and Thanksgiving, help him with his homework, and I can't even pick him up or take him to school. And I've been on the ban list his entire life.
Delray's family wants him around, helping raise his son, but the government is keeping him out of their lives. For the women and children who live in public housing, the ban list is a burden that breaks up families.
The only thing I can say about the ban list is they're destroying people's family, and it's not right. I don't mind the banning this if it was something that you did serious, like killing somebody on a property, shooting, something like that. But my kids are not criminals.
Delray's predicament is not unique. More than 500 people are on the ban list at the Annapolis Housing Authority. James Alexander was banned from seeing his daughter in her mother's home based on a juvenile arrest in which he was never prosecuted or convicted. So the baby's mother, Delonda Moses, had a choice: raise her daughter without a father or move away from the support of her family in public housing to be with James. The ban wouldn't even let James pick up a baby bottle.
And he rushed up to the porch, picked up the bottles, and he was coming off, and the police saw him, and he was arrested for trespassing. He'd only been on the property for a minute, and it was completely innocent. He was just trying to help his daughter. But that's led to a criminal arrest, and now he's being prosecuted.
Yeah, I'm trying to be a good father, and I don't know. I just try to stay out of trouble.
James played football and basketball in high school. He wants to go to college so he can be a nurse.
It's important for me that Jane be involved because I want her to have a father in her life. You know, everybody don't have fathers in their life and nothing like that. And I want to be a family. That's why we kept the baby, so we can be a family, not to get separated.
So the reality is very far from the abstract goal, which is a laudable one, of making public housing safer. It just ends up making things more difficult for these women who are trying to raise their children and do so with the support of their families.
They got this banning list, and these fathers can't participate in the kids' life. It's wrong, because if they didn't want to be in the kids' life and could be in it, they would have something to say. Oh, he got these kids, and he don't do this, and he don't. They got kids now, and they still can't do nothing with them because of the banning list.
In the effort to clean up public housing or to rid public housing of drugs, these law and order policies come on and make life that much harder for single mothers.
Would you want the government to come in and say who you can invite into your own home, and to potentially arrest your guests if they dared to come into your home against the will of the government?
I feel sad, depressed sometimes, because I want to be there for them. I want to show them that I care about them.
That was a video, a small clip you can see on YouTube, that was made by the ACLU to outline the case that they're fighting in Annapolis right now. And we are joined by Deborah Gian, who's legal director for the ACLU of Maryland, Glenda Smith, one of the Annapolis public housing residents, bringing this lawsuit against the housing authority of the city of Annapolis. And you can join us here at 410-889-8030 to join us in this conversation, to be part of this conversation here on the Mark Steiner Show, to talk about what's going on in Annapolis. So it's unbelievable when I first read this. I mean, I remember in the 90s that in they attempted something like this in Baltimore. And I remember there was a real pushback on it when they were trying to ban some people from public housing. And it almost seems like something out of a bad movie, or something out of it would happen in some fascist regime or some authoritarian country. I mean, to ban people from seeing their family. So first of all, let me get some background on this, the legal aspects of this, from you, Deborah John. Then I want to hear Glenda Smith's story.
Well, it is fairly tragic that the housing authority has resorted to this kind of a policy. It has been tried before in other communities.
Just bring the mic a little closer. I'm sorry. I apologize.
In other public housing communities, early in the 90s, a small housing authority on the Eastern Shore in St. Michael's had a policy like this, which was challenged by the ACLU and was abandoned by the housing authority as a result of the challenge. Another case in around 2000 challenged a similar kind of policy in the city of Frederick, where the housing authority there had a well-established ban list and was very aggressively pursuing arrests of people who were banned. And that that case actually went further than this original St. Michael's one, and had the federal court issued a preliminary injunction to stop the policy because the court ruled that it was a violation of federal law. So it's very frustrating that now, you know, 9 years later, the Annapolis Housing Authority is still doing the same thing, even though these prior precedents exist where the courts have, when these policies have been challenged, they have been struck down.
And I want to come back to the kind of even the heart of more of what's going on here and tell you some of the stories of some of the people and why and how they've been banned. But Glenda, tell us your story, would you, about what happened to you and your family and who's not allowed to come into this, to your home?
Yes, sir. My granddaughter, I'm raising her and her son, which is my great-grandson. She got into a girly-girly fight. You know how young girls are growing up. And she got arrested. And later on after that, you know, I didn't hear any more about it. But then she was sent to a program called Wings of Life to get her life together after the fact.
What is Wings of Life?
Wings of Life is a program for young girls to help them, you know, with problems in their lives and get them on the right track. And she finished that successfully, but then I got the letter to say that when she get home, she wasn't allowed to come back to my home to me and my great-grandson.
So, and how long has that been?
Since she'd been at my home?
Yes.
About 8 months or more. I can't remember right off, but it's been a while.
Deputy Johnson, we're talking about people here who have not been convicted of a crime for many of them. Those who have gone through programs and have come out rehabbed, are working with jobs, trying to take care of families. Go ahead.
The Housing Authority does not pay attention at all to what happens once somebody is arrested, what happens with those charges, whether they're prosecuted, whether anyone's ever convicted. They have said in the media that they consider that to be irrelevant. And even when somebody, you know, goes to trial and is acquitted and comes back to the Housing Authority and says that they've been vindicated. Please remove me from the banned list. The Housing Authority has refused to do that. And in Kiera's case, Glenda's granddaughter, she was just a juvenile. She was a tenant of the Housing Authority at the time of this fight she had. Was she 16, Glenda?
Oh, yes.
So she was effectively evicted and banned at the same time. And her son, Glenda's great-grandson, Rico, has been living with Glenda since that time and is his caretaker. But he cannot have his mother visit him in her home, in his home.
So who has authority over this? I mean, who makes a decision like this? And why was it made?
The head of security for the Housing Authority is the one who makes decisions about who's banned. The Housing Authority has – the executive director and the Housing Authority board certainly support the policy. They have delegated authority over the banning to the head of security. They've also entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Annapolis Police Department that reimburses the police department $100,000 per year to enforce this policy through trespassing arrests. So both the police department and the Housing Authority are responsible.
So tell me a little bit, Glenda, about the conversations going on among the people who live in the housing project where you live. And is there a debate or discussion about this? Are people who agree with this and don't agree with this?
Well, a lot of people don't agree with it because I've been a member of the resident council there in the community where I live, and I have had people come to me and said it's not fair, you know, because family is family and the law is the law, you know. You're breaking down the families where people are trying to keep a family together, and they don't agree with it, you know. I never heard anyone say they agree with it.
I'd like to get our listeners to join us here at 410-319-8888. We're talking about a policy in Annapolis, public housing in Annapolis, where people who have been arrested but not even convicted of a crime. This might have happened when you were 14 years old and now, or 13 years old, and now you're not allowed to come in and be with your parents, be with your children, be with your mother, your father, or take care of anybody. People have gotten arrested for this. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on what you think can and should be done, or if this is something that makes sense to anybody. 410-319-8888. The ACLU has brought a lawsuit on behalf of the residents of the housing project in Annapolis to fight this and to turn this over. I mean, can't the city council of Annapolis, turn this over? This is not a law. This is just an ordinance dreamed up by the Housing Authority and the Annapolis Police. And it's not a law, right?
It's not a law. It's a policy of the Housing Authority. And the mayor and the city council of Annapolis are responsible for the police department and liable for the actions of the police department if the case succeeds and the policy is invalidated.
Well, so Glenda and Deborah, what's the mayor said about this? Has your mayor said anything about this?
Not that I've heard of. No.
Right. I think in the Annapolis newspaper, she was quoted saying something very neutral about what she did, trying to distance herself and distance the city from from the policy, saying that the police department just enforces it. HACA, the Housing Authority of the City of Annapolis, is actually the driving force.
But you're saying that she has the legal authority to overturn this ordinance and say it is not correct.
She has the legal authority to direct the police department to stop enforcing it.
That's what she has the authority to do. She can't tell the Housing Authority, you can't have this ordinance, but she can tell the police not to enforce this ordinance.
The Housing Authority has its own Board of Commissioners and decision makers that can change the policy, but the police department can stop enforcing it, and then it will be, a toothless policy if nobody's enforcing it.
And the politically, I can see where she might have a hard time doing that, though she could do it if she thought the policy was wrong, and that would be something some mayors might do. It'd be interesting to ask her that question. Let's go to the phones here. We're joined in studio by Deborah Gian, legal director for the ACLU of Maryland. Glenda Smith joins us by phone from her home. She's one of the Annapolis public housing residents bringing a lawsuit against the Housing Authority of the City of Annapolis. You can join us here by writing to us at steinershow@gmail.com to read your thoughts in the air, or join us at 410-319-8888 to let your thoughts be heard about this policy and what you make of it. And Mackenzie, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Mackenzie.
Hi. Just have a kind of a question and a comment.
Sure.
My comment first is I can understand and kind of see why the law was made, because a lot of times you see in housing projects the same people who have been arrested and are on probation are coming back to the community selling drugs and so on and so forth. So I can understand the kind of concept of trying to keep these people out of the housing project and coming back to sell. But my question is, how are they breaking up families? I mean, the people, you can leave the housing project, can you not? Or you just can't, these people who have been arrested can't enter back into the housing project. Is that correct?
That's right. For example, in the video, Delroy Folks and his son, this policy, because Delroy Senior is banned, he really is not able to participate fully in his son's life. His son is only 3 years old. All of his activities, his Head Start program, his sports activities, are on Housing Authority property. And his dad is not permitted to visit him at his home or to really be involved in any of those activities with his son, and he desperately wants to be more involved in his son's life.
But one of the questions Mackenzie asked, though, was why can't housing residents, if they're fed up with this policy, just go out and move out and get their own place?
May I answer that, please?
Please go ahead, Glenda Smith. We'd love that.
Yes. In Annapolis, you can't afford, it's no affordable housing there. And I have only lived in housing for 5 years. But my point is, why should I have to move because I want the right to be a grandmother to my grandchildren over the law? You know, the law is the law and family is family. I understand what you're saying too, ma'am. But it's two different scenarios here, you know. I just want to have a family and raise my granddaughter and my grandson to the best of my ability.
I'm sorry, Mackenzie. Can I say it again?
I was saying if the law was changed where it wasn't just if you were arrested, but if you were actually convicted of a felony or a crime, would that be constitutionally correct, or would there be a problem with that as well with the ACLU?
I think if the policy was going to be revamped, it would have to involve tenants in the process in a way that they're not involved now. As it stands now, sort of the dictate comes down from on high. This isn't even a provision in the tenants' leases. They're just told, that these new people are constantly being added to the banned list. And it's gone from 400 to 522 over the course of the last 8 months, I think. So we believe that there could be a way to retain some kind of a system that has proper process involved, notice to tenants, but the tenants need to have a voice in these decisions about who's going to be banned, and to be able to express that reasons why a certain person shouldn't be added to the list because that person is, a vital part of their family and at least must be permitted to come to that tenant's apartment. I mean, I think there could be banning of individuals from other areas of the public housing. Maybe they could be restricted to just visiting their families.
Because I think that's where the problem comes in.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
We have a lot of callers, but finish your thought, Mackenzie. Go ahead.
Because I've lived in public housing before, and a lot of times, especially with the drug trafficking, family members, and I'm not saying everyone, but the ones that are participating in this are part of it. They're holding the drugs in their homes. You know, they're being paid to do this type of thing. So, of course, they're going to say, well, you can come in. You can be a part of it. They're going to take them off of the ban. So I just want to know what a way that they could still do this but not involve those types of people who are trying to get around the ban.
Glenda, as someone who lives there, how do you respond to that?
Well, it's hard to respond because I understand both ways, but you have to go through it to understand what we're really going through because of all of this. You know, it's not only in public housing that we have these problems that you're talking about, ma'am,
mm-hmm.
but we're suffering more in public housing than others because they're living in their homes elsewhere. So it's just not public housing.
So, I mean, are the examples, let's say, of people like Terrell Downs, who was never convicted of a crime, even though he was arrested when he was a teenager, but then grew up in the public housing. He was arrested 2 years ago, for trespassing because he was banned for a crime he was not convicted of, and then spent 8 months in jail for trespassing. Now, is this common, Deborah Gianna, or are most of the people we're talking about who are being banned people who have been convicted of more heinous crimes?
No. If you look at the list of banned individuals, again, these are only lists what they've been charged with.
Right.
Many of these are just misdemeanor nuisance crimes. A number of people are listed as being banned for trespassing, which is very curious. But Terrell, he's especially motivated to visit his family. And he has been arrested, I think, 9 times for trespassing. His grandma lives in public housing, and he's devoted to her. He was arrested for trespassing because he rushed to her side. She was being transported in an ambulance to the hospital, and he went there to get into just as he was climbing into the ambulance, he was arrested for trespassing.
Folks, let's talk about this and your thoughts on all this. Mackenzie, thanks for your call, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Jim in Perry Hall. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
My take on all of this is that if you're in public housing, you're being subsidized by taxpayers like me who have to pay property taxes, and that you should obey the rules. And I have no sympathy for anybody that the police arrest. I mean, you know, I'm feeding you and housing you with my hard-earned dollars. If you're in public housing, get out of public housing. Get a job.
All right, let's talk about that for a moment.
Well, Glenda, maybe you want to talk about your job.
I sure do.
Go ahead.
There are people in public housing that work and pay taxes, too. Public housing is for people that can't afford to pay the cost of living in Annapolis right now. There are good people in public housing. We are human beings like other people, but we just can't afford some places right now. And I do pay taxes. My family and everybody else that whoever live in public housing do have jobs to pay taxes too.
Deborah?
The dearth of affordable housing in Annapolis is really tragic. I think that public housing is the only option for people of very limited means there. And many of the folks who do live there, you know, they are not newcomers to Annapolis. These folks have lived in that community for generations. And, telling them to move and leave their families, it's not fair.
Let me go back to the phones, and we'll explore some of this in greater depth as well during the course of this conversation over the next 20 minutes or so at 410-319-8888. Renee in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, Renee. Welcome.
I had the question about taxes. If the citizens of Annapolis are paying taxes, what part do they play in setting the laws for where they live at? And these police, is this the only assignment they have, is to sit and stalk people trying to communicate with their families?
Well, I'm sure the police do many things in Annapolis, but they do have a contract with the Housing Authority that pays them $100,000 per year to engage in this activity, and so it is a part of their job.
And as Glenda said, and as you said, Glenda, a minute ago, I think it's really important to realize that many people, not most people in public housing, have work. The wages are not high, but pay taxes and are taxpaying citizens of Annapolis. It's not as if everybody's just waiting around for a government check.
And the restrictions on public housing tenants are so strong that it is, if you live in public housing, you are by definition a law-abiding citizen. You cannot live in public housing if you've been arrested, if you've been convicted of a crime. The restrictions have become very severe on public housing tenants.
So let me understand what now, someone just heard you say that, Deborah Gian, that we go away. Is there a contradiction here? You're saying that if you're a public housing resident, you couldn't be convicted of a crime, but how does that tie into being banned from public housing? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, you just said that if you can't get a place, you cannot live in public housing if you've been incarcerated or spent time in prison. So how does that fit into the ban?
Well, the ban is on people visiting, not being tenants. Many of these people have just been convicted of
the ban is on people visiting.
Visiting.
This is visiting.
Not tenancies, right?
Right.
But many housing authorities, and I believe Annapolis too, has a one strike and you're out policy that you cannot be, you know, you can be evicted if you are arrested or convicted of a crime. And so these are definitely law-abiding citizens who live in Annapolis public housing.
410-319-8888. Danielle, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Danielle, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, welcome.
My comment basically is I think this all can be looked at in two different ways. One way is if you are a convicted felon, if you have been found guilty of a crime, why should your neighbors have to be subjected to such nuisance or even worry or care and concern for their particular family? I just feel like, people get so emotional and so upset, and then they want to use their families as a cop-out. I agree with one of the callers where they said there are other meeting places that your families can go. There are other ways that you can communicate, visit, love, and be with your family. But why should other people's families kind of feel leery or afraid just because of decisions that person made? So I don't think the law is bad. However, I do think that it should be some restrictions because if someone such as the young man that you were speaking of earlier has not been found guilty of a crime, then why is he still being penalized?
Well, but let me ask you, the people many of the people on the ban list did get in trouble with the law sometime long in the past and paid their, you know, if they were convicted, they did pay their debt. They served their time and are trying to really get their lives back on track. Should they be forever banned from visiting at any public housing property? This ban is very difficult to get out from under. Once it's automatically at least 3 years and can be indefinite, and very few of the people who make requests to have themselves removed, no matter how distant in the past their problems with the law were, are unable to get off that list. And Glenda's situation shows, you know, her granddaughter was just a juvenile, and she went to a rehabilitation program, and yet she's not really able to. She's only 18, 19 now, and she's not able to get to start her life up again because she can't live with her grandma. She's essentially homeless at this time because it's so hard to find affordable housing in the Annapolis area.
I think part of the tenure here, we're taking a very short break, and I appreciate the call, Danielle. I want to explore it in a little more depth. And our next caller up is David, so hold on. He's a former housing police officer. I want to see what he has to say. But I think part of the tenor of what we're hearing is that people are worried that criminal elements come in and terrorize public housing residents who have a right to peace and freedom. And if you can, let's try to make this demarcation between that for our listeners to understand. We're talking with Glenda Smith, one of the Annapolis public housing residents, who's bringing a lawsuit against the Housing Authority of the City of Annapolis for not allowing over 500 people to visit their relatives in public housing, be fathers and mothers, even if they have not been convicted of a crime. I want to make it clear about that. Even if they have not been convicted of a crime. Or just been accused or arrested, but never convicted. Deborah Gian is with us also. She's legal director of the ACLU of Maryland. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News & World Report in their annual Best Hospitals Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. And we will be right back. Go right to our phones for David and Jackie and everybody else who's waiting to get on a line here, but looking forward to your thoughts. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're talking about an ordinance in the city of Annapolis, at the Housing Authority of Annapolis, that bans over 500 people from visiting relatives, their sons, daughters, mothers, fathers, in public housing, not because they've been convicted of a crime, because they may have been arrested before for some other reason. Some of them have been arrested at all, but have been arrested for trying to see their relatives in public housing. And there are a lot of issues around this. A lawsuit was brought to change this ordinance, which is not a law. Deborah Gian is legal director of the ACLU of Maryland. She's with us, as is Glenda Smith, who is one of the Annapolis public housing residents, bringing a lawsuit against the Housing Authority of the City of Annapolis, 410-319-8888. On the way back to the phones, we have a number of people calling in we want to get to from Annapolis and from Baltimore. But I want to let's just be clear about this. I mean, what I said was there's a tenor in some of the calls where people are saying that people in public housing have a right to live without fear, have a right to live in safety, and that laws and ordinances like this are there for the safety of the residents to keep violent elements, drug dealers, out of public housing. So, and how does that relate to this list? Let's try to get to the bottom of this before we go back to the phones.
Well, I think that's exactly right, that is the goal of the policy. But for a policy like this to be effective, the tenants, the people who do live in that community, need to have a voice and need to be heard in the formation of the policy and in the formation of any kind of a banning list. They need to be able to have some impact on the policy and not just have it be dictated to them without their I mean, if it is for their benefit, which I certainly believe it is, why not involve them in the process? You know, there as Glenda was involved in a residence council in her community. You know, there are residence councils in all these communities, and they should have a voice in how a policy like this is going to be formulated and enforced.
Do you want to have something to say about that, Glenda?
Excuse me, I didn't hear you.
I said, do you have something to say about that as well? I mean, this whole idea that people are saying that these ordinances are in place to protect people in the public housing from people who would commit violence or sell drugs.
Well, Mr. Stern, I feel this way. You know, like I said at first, it's not only in public housing that people have problems with their children, or you're living next to someone that you don't know what he could do to you or your children. So I don't believe in what people say in that perspective about us. You know, we're still human beings. We're just living in a place where we can afford. You know, you have people everywhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not only in public housing. I'm not saying that I want this in our community, but it's happening everywhere. So why is it just public housing that the finger is being pointed that we don't want nothing out of life? Like the gentleman say, we don't pay tax. That's a stereotype, you know, all due respect to him. But nobody knows me, and I don't know them. But it's just unfair to the families or what's going on, where they want someone to come into their home that up on the hill and say, well, your daughter just got locked up for something, so we don't want her in our community. You know, you got to look at it both ways in all communities.
That's a powerful point. Let's see what our listeners are thinking at 410-319-8888. David in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
As I explained to you earlier, I'm a former Housing Authority police officer. I was in Baltimore City. And I believe they still have the same ordinance in the city where there is a ban list. And believe me, as a law enforcement officer, I was one of the staunchest supporters of this policy. And, of course, you want those people who create problems to just be gone. You know, if they're going to continue to commit crimes and cause problems, they're making life a living hell for the good people of public housing who just want to live somewhere that's safe and that's clean and that's free of crime. And they have a right to do that. But listening to the young lady and the young man who sounds like he sincerely wants to be a part of his children's lives, and the young lady who definitely wants to be a part of her children's lives, there should be some kind of tenant council that's comprised of the tenant and the powers that be, so that they just don't make it a blanket policy that if you get arrested, you get kicked out. You know, she had some kind of rehabilitation. He sounds like there was some kind of rehabilitation for him. So it should be really done on a case-by-case basis, you know, comprise some kind of council, you know, a tenant council where everybody, like the young lady said, that they have a voice. And I believe they will be sincere in rejecting those people who are serious problems and, you know, giving the people who are not serious problems, who have been rehabilitated, who have changed their ways, to have a second chance.
But I guess what I'm saying, hearing you say, David, and what I've heard from both Deborah Gian and Glenda Smith, and what I've been reading about this case is the problem is that the vast majority of people on this 522-person list being banned from public housing were either convicted of crimes years ago when they were juveniles and have served their time and been done, or they never were really convicted and just arrested and not allowed to see their families. And on top of that, they've been what's on the list there is being arrested for trespass and been arrested for trespass because they tried to see their grandmother. I mean, there's something not right about this. From my perspective, it's different than saying, you know, we caught young Jim slinging crack cocaine and with several vials, and he might have gotten out of jail, but he's not allowed back in the housing project. That's different than saying, that's different than what's going on here, it seems to me. David, you still there? David? Oh, I lost him.
Somewhere. Hello?
So, oh, is it?
Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, who's this?
This is David.
Yeah. David, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And that's why I was saying the tenant council, you know, that could be comprised of some of the tenants and some of the powers that be. They can look at, you know, why this person is being banned. If it's something that's new, if it's something that's fresh, or something that continuously happens, or if it's something that happened years ago, or even if, like the young lady, she, you know, she was involved in a program and has some kind of rehabilitation, that she can have a second chance.
Right. Well, David, we only have a few minutes left, so I'd like to give Deborah Gian and Glenda Smith a final thought here before we move on.
Well, I think that's an excellent suggestion, and we very much want to try to work this situation out with the city and with the Housing Authority. We have tried. We actually delayed filing of the lawsuit for over a year, making efforts to negotiate with the city to try to reform this policy without resorting to legal action, but we really have kind of run into a stone wall, and so we finally did file the lawsuit. But, you know, we're putting out feelers to try to negotiate with the city to try to work this out, because I think that that would be best for everybody rather than having to go through a long process of litigation with court rulings and dictates about how Housing Authority should operate its properties.
And while we'll come back to look at this and try to quiz some of the elected members of Annapolis and find out more about this, Glenda Smith, for today's conversation, you have the last comment. Go ahead.
Well, I'd just like to thank you, first of all, and ACLU for what they're doing to help me. And I just hope and pray that both sides come up with a decision that it would help everybody, because, like I say, we're still human beings no matter where we live. Public housing does not validate me of who I am and a lot of others that live in public housing. You know, it's just a place where we live, and if anyone would like to help us, they can pray that things get better for us.
Glenda Smith, good luck, and thank you so much. And I hope that we meet one day face-to-face, and we'll come back to this topic and see what's going on. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, sir.
And Deborah Gian, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much.
And I'd like to call these segments we do here our Civil Liberties Watch, and we'll keep them up, see what's going on around the state of Maryland and around the country. We are going to take a little ride, at least via audio and telephone, to downtown Baltimore, where there is a rally going on at this moment that we talked about on the show the other day. We're for health care reform. Melody Simmons, WEA reporter, is down there, and she's calling in from the rally. Melody, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks. It's pretty crowded down here. I'd say a good 200, 250. That's, and more coming in.
So tell me what is happening out there. What's going on in Mount Vernon now, where you are?
Well, it's a lot of people are coming in. There's a lot of signs. There's people here of all ages, and actually a lot of medical professionals, a lot of school teachers, college professionals, and so it's a good mix. Everybody kind of here rallying for health care.
So who do you have for us to speak to down there?
Well, I have Vinny DeMarco, who's one of the organizers here, and I'm going to put him on right now. And he's going to talk a little bit about the scene that we're seeing.
All right. And you're going to try to bring in some other folks as well?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Vinny, how are you?
Good, good.
Well, Vinny DeMarco is on the line with us now, down from the rally. And, Vinny, why don't you describe, again, you're head of the Maryland Healthcare for All Coalition. You've been a guest on the show many times. Talk a bit about what's going on at the rally right now. But first of all, let me ask you, why this rally?
The purpose of this rally is to make clear to members of Congress that the people of Maryland want health care for all now, and that we really are waited long enough for a system that will make sure everybody can afford quality health care. And there are many, many people here who are clapping, cheering, singing, and just making their voices heard. Bishop Doug Miles just spoke about the moral imperative of making sure quality, affordable health care is there for everyone, and we're going to be making sure here that the members of the Maryland delegation, who we know are supportive, know that the people of Maryland are behind them.
Now, I've been reading today on the New York Times website that there are rallies going on all over the country. And is this part of that movement around the country that's going on now, Organizing for America, trying to kind of push this ahead?
Yes. MoveOn.org had a lot to do with this rally. They're a great organization, and they reached out to their constituents, and they contacted us, Maryland Healthcare for All. We reached out to our coalition, and the people of Maryland are responding here and across the state to say the time has come for quality, affordable health care. All of us, Mark, as we've talked about many times, all of us suffer when there are 760,000 uninsured in Maryland, 47 million uninsured in America. All of us suffer because we all pay the cost of the health care for the uninsured. Let's get a system where the uninsured have the health care and all of us see premiums much more reduced. So it's a system now we have now that's bad for the uninsured and bad for all of us. And the purpose of this rally is to say the Maryland congressional delegation, the people are behind you. Let's get health care for all.
What you just said is what I'm interested in as well, because one of the things that seems to be clear here in America is that people are very confused about this health care reform. And is part of this to kind of energize the base that helped elect Barack Obama, that it seems to be not as energized about this, maybe even a little disillusioned by it all?
The people of Maryland, like the people of America, demand quality, affordable health care for all now. And this rally is part of showing. I think it's very clear that the people of Maryland want this to happen. And I think our delegation and President Obama should go forward and make it happen.
Vinny, it's always good to talk to you. I appreciate you being part of this, and you know you'll be our guest on the show many times, and we're going to have you back.
I look forward to it, Mark. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you. And I think, who do we have? Melody, you back with us?
I'm here.
So who do we have?
I have Dr. Peter Bielenson.
Oh, great.
He's health commissioner in Howard County. He has a more suburban view.
Let's talk to him. Peter, how are you?
Hey, Mark.
Been a long time. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I still have an urban view as well, though. I still live in Baltimore.
That, I know you do. I mean, you're a man who's both suburban and urban at the same time.
That's right.
So talk a bit about what's going about why you're at this rally, since you're an appointed official in Howard County who runs the healthcare system there.
I have, as has my county executive Ken Ullman, as have a lot of elected officials, very strongly held the belief that healthcare is a right, not a privilege. And we've actually put our money and our action where our mouths are, at least in Howard County, with our Healthy Howard program, which is for the uninsured, you know, middle and working class families in Howard County, where we have basically full services available for them for $50 to $85 per person per month. We think such a thing should be occurring around the country, and that's why I'm here to support this healthcare rally.
Now, but tell me what you think politically is going on here. I mean, you're a man who's been involved in politics and in public services as public health commissioner both in Baltimore City and now in Howard County. I remember when you ran for Congress and ran a really strong campaign for Congress. Healthcare was a big part of the issues that you raised when you were running.
Right.
And
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm just curious about what you think the politics of this rally is. Some people I've heard in rallies other parts of the country are saying, don't back down, don't compromise, give us health care from the Democratic side and from the people who supported Barack Obama and Hillary. So tell me what you think is going on here politically.
Well, that's clearly the case of this group and, you know, MoveOn.org and other groups, the Organizing for America, our Health Care for All group are all very much in favor of the major Democratic proposals now. I've got to say, though, from a political perspective and seeing the immense amount of fiery rhetoric that's gone on in opposition to this, most of it quite misleading, if not completely false, I would be surprised, and what's happened at the town hall meetings with Blue Dog Democrats, et cetera, I'd actually be surprised if we get anything like full-scale health care reform. I think we're going to get health insurance reform, so the no more pre-existing condition exclusions, no more lifetime caps, which is, you know, is helpful, and only modest expansion because the cost to expand subsidies to the low-income and working class families is probably going to be too expensive to be supported by the majority of the legislators.
So, I mean, now, how do you feel about that?
I think it's outrageous. I mean, just to quote my little campaign speech, it's unconscionable that in the wealthiest, most technologically advanced country in the world, 50 million of us are uninsured, and another 40 to 50 million who are often forgotten are so poorly insured that they can't afford primary preventive care because of the high deductibles and copays. So it's outrageous that we're not doing this as a country, but I think what's going to happen is it's going to be left to the states to fill the breach.
That's a kind of a frightening thought. And but one day soon, Peter Bielan said, well, I'd like to have you on to talk about what you've done in Howard County. And maybe you and the county executive can join us to talk about that.
Be very happy tomorrow.
Good to talk to you again. Take care of yourself.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Peter Bielanson, who is a health commissioner for Howard County. Melody Simmons, you're back with us, our reporter.
Yeah, I'm here, and I have a physician now. I have an internal, this is a physician of internal medicine, Dr. Aldiano Necocheo. And he is also affiliated with Doctors for America.
Okay, let's have him on the air with us.
Hi, good evening.
Doctor, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about why you're there and your perspective on what's going on with this rally and what you think is going to come out of it.
Well, seriously, just from working in the hospital and seeing what happens in our wards and in ERs, it is just unbelievable that we haven't done this earlier. We have people postponing care that is needed because they are concerned about the care or because they don't have a primary care physician, they don't have access to care. We have our ERs clogged with patients who will present with really late diagnosis or who haven't been able to see care ahead of time. And that actually affects all of us. I mean, I think that the biggest concern that people have is that they don't want their insurance or their health care to be taken away from them. But you know, the reality is that there is no my insurance. There is no my healthcare. We're kind of all in this together. You know, the health of our coworkers, of our fellow citizens, really affects what happens with all of us. So that's kind of how we have to look at it.
Tell me about what is your organization. Tell us about that very quickly.
Doctors for America is a grassroots organization made up of primarily volunteer physicians from all over the United States. Really, from all specialties, and that's pretty much what our goal is, to try to get the opinions of physicians who want to see healthcare reform passed as soon as possible, and really, it's really a grassroots organization. We contact physicians, we try to get them out to events like this, and try to present the perspective of doctors who are working in the front lines to inform what is actually happening in our healthcare system.
And can you mind if I ask you where you practice? You're an internal medicine. Is that what you do?
That's correct. I practice here in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an internal medicine physician, but also I trained in preventive medicine. So this is really dear to my heart.
So are you optimistic or pessimistic about what you think is about to happen on Capitol Hill with our health insurance reform, with health reform?
You know, I think what is happening is very good. That there's a lot of debate about the issues. There's also a lot of misinformation and unfortunately lies out there. But I went to a town hall meeting yesterday, and what I see is that the majority of people there were actually for healthcare reform. There are a very small number of people who are opposed to reform, and I think they're just very vocal. But the majority of people who came to us afterwards were very much in favor of it. So I think the debate is good. It's good that we have this question aired, but it's good that we also talk about things that are real. You know, we can't spend time talking about things that are lies or misleading comments. We really have to talk about things that are real, and I think it's going to happen. I'm very optimistic.
Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you being part of
this conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Melody, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So we're talking, actually, Melody Simmons is our reporter. She's down there talking to people who are at this rally for health care reform taking place on Mount Vernon right now. It's a health care reform candlelight vigil and rally.
That's right.
Number of speakers. So tell me what's the tenor of this crowd for you?
Well, I think there's a lot of people here who are very anxious for change. This is what the signs say. I think there's a lot of support from the commuters that are driving by as well. So that's the kind of the spirit that's in the air right now.
I'm hearing a lot of blowing of horns.
Yeah, they're blowing the horns. I've only seen one thumbs down. But, Mark, there's a lot of everyday people here, and I wanted to put on one more.
Oh, please do. We have about 2 minutes left, so please do.
Yeah. She is an English comp professor at Towson University.
All right.
And she's here out of concern for the issue itself. And I'd like her viewpoint is very important, and it's very indicative
We only have like a minute and a half, so let's get her on.
Okay. All right. Here she is. Hello.
Hi, Beth Edelstein. Welcome. We only have about a minute and a half, so please tell us why you're there.
I'm here because I think we need a civil response to the health care issue. I think it's very important for all of us in this country to have affordable, manageable health care for everybody, regardless of status or condition. We are overworked and underpaid in terms of our health care. We need more health care available, more options for so many of us. I'm also concerned about the level of discourse with the town hall meetings. I think the rally here today is an opportunity for us to be civil with one another and to listen to what each other has to say.
Beth Edelstein, is that right?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Mark Steiner Show today, and thank you for going to the rally and letting your voice be heard.
You're welcome.
Good to have you on with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hey, Mark.
Melody, hi. So thank you so much, Melody, for reporting for us today down there.
Quite a story.
Melody Simmons is a reporter for WEA and the Mark Steiner Show. She is doing a great deal of work here and produced a wonderful series on the dropouts in Baltimore City. And thanks so much for reporting, and we'll be talking to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Melody Simmons has been with us, and we're reporting live from the rally downtown, the healthcare reform candlelight vigil rally taking place right now at Washington Monument at Mount Vernon Square. Before we go to break here, I want to encourage those of you who want to intern on the Mark Steiner Show and work with us here to produce what we do out here at WEAA to write Justin, J-U-S-T-I-N, Justin at SteinerShow.org, and join us here and working on the Mark Steiner Show. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas. This month, Urbanite goes back to school with a learning issue, featuring reports on future of high-stakes testing, new approaches to the dropout crisis, and challenges of teaching behind bars. Urbanite is available at over 750 locations. When we return, we're going to be joined by some incredible students with some great stories of what they're doing to change their lives and the lives of their communities. So stay with us.